with the product. I'm happy to endorse it. My hairstylist just said the other day that my hair color was growing out really fast. She said, it's because you use the Ovation products. Your hair has never grown this quickly before. That is true. And now there is a beautiful Valentine's Day gift set. It's got the cell therapy hair treatment, the volume therapy shampoo, and the moisture therapy conditioner. I use all of those every day. Plus, you get whipped mousse that has some hold to it scent. And it's really pretty. The box is pink and has a heart on the top. It's real gorgeous. All right, so here's the deal. Go to ovationhair.com, ovationhair.com. And if you're a new customer, select Angie Austin Daybreak USA at checkout for an additional introductory discount. Again, ovationhair.com, ovationhair.com.
A terrorist attack today at the Louvre in Paris.
Some scary moments today at one of the world's most famous museums. A French soldier on duty at the Louvre shot and wounded an armed suspect who reportedly tried to assault him and then enter the iconic building. France's prime minister says the incident was clearly terrorist in nature. Heavily armed police responded to the scene, and visitors and employees were evacuated from the Louvre as well as a nearby shopping center.
Witnesses say the attacker was yelling Allahu Akbar as he came after the police officer. The Trump administration celebrating the new jobs report. Here's Chris Barnes.
January's jobs report just released this morning, and it shows the biggest gain of jobs in 4 months. The Labor Department saying that non-farm payrolls added 227,000 jobs. Most of the job gains were in retail trade, construction, and financial companies. The U.S. economy had added 157,000 jobs in December, which was below expectations. I'm Chris Barnes.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
If your pet needed thousands of dollars in vet care, could you afford it? PetSavingsUSA.com members are covered by discounted pet insurance with the first 2 months free. Plus, save up to 50% at every major retailer and receive hundreds of dollars worth of free gifts. To receive 2 months of free pet insurance and an instant $100 in savings, call 877-835-6060. That's 877-835-6060. Or go to PetSavingsUSA.com.
A California man is in the hospital after having brain surgery following an attack by two pit bulls. Jason Campidonia has a story.
The 76-year-old had been walking his Pomeranian when the two pit bulls first attacked and killed his dog in Lincoln Heights last night. Witnesses say the two pit bulls pulled the Pomeranian in two before turning on the man. Animal control officers now have the pit bulls in custody, and the owner is being questioned by police. The man had to have brain surgery after the attack, but he's expected to survive. No charges have been filed. Jason Campidonia, Los Angeles.
The IRS has a new group of people they want to go after. People who don't pay their taxes. Here's more from Sharon Reed.
Don't pay your taxes and you won't leave the country. The Internal Revenue Service says it may start the process of revoking the passports for people who do not pay up. It's part of a law Congress passed and former President Obama signed more than a year ago. That law says the IRS can inform the State Department about people with serious delinquent tax debt. The State Department may then refuse to issue a passport or revoke an existing one. The tax agency defines seriously delinquent debt as $50,000 or more.
Mexican drug kingpin Joaquin El Chapo Guzman is not happy about his jail conditions in the U.S. While appearing before a judge this morning in Brooklyn Federal Court, lawyers for Guzman said officers are now allowing Guzman's common-law wife to visit him. They also complained about the drug kingpin being on a 23-hour lockdown. USA Radio News.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Pat Smits, and the program is The Law. Today, can you believe it? It's February already. We've actually had a great winter when you think about it. Unless you make money snow plowing, then it has not been a good winter. So I guess I could comment on the news, but I probably won't. Number of new jobs, obviously, that's a positive thing. There are other things that are not positive, although, frankly, I think some people would be surprised that those folks who owe $50,000 or more in income taxes can get passports and do freely travel in and out of the country. That the State Department or the IRS considers debts, meaning that you owe taxes more than $50,000, that's what's considered seriously delinquent. I think what's happened, they need to beef up, obviously, the enforcement and do some other things. From what I'm hearing, that refunds are going to be slower this year because of the fraud that they've experienced in the past. And be very careful because it's I was surprised at how easy it seems to be to get someone else's tax refund. I've seen this happen in my own family, that when my daughter filed her tax returns, she was notified that someone else had filed and claimed her refund. And, of course, she had no idea how that happened. Very possibly someone in the tax office, not the IRS office, but where she had her tax returns prepared the prior year, somehow took information, and how they were able to do this so is beyond me. But I guess it's not that difficult. In any event, what's going on in our weather this weekend? Actually, again, this weekend should be at least Saturday, tomorrow sunny, high of about 34 degrees, but it's always great if it's sunny. Then increasing clouds tomorrow night, low down to about 17 degrees, so that's getting cold. And tonight it could be 15 degrees, so that we're going to have a cold night, but it'll be gradually clearing. Nice day, as I said, tomorrow. On Sunday, the prediction is warmer, high of 42 degrees, but cloudy. So that, you know, that's going to make it not feel like it's 42 degrees. By Sunday night, mostly cloudy. And Monday, it's mostly sunny, and again, about a 43 degrees is expected to be the high. So that should be a beautiful day. However, by Monday night, there's partly cloudy earlier in the evening, and then a chance of a wintry mix getting down about 28 degrees. So could be rain, could be sleet, could be snow, only about a 30% chance. But that's what's happening in the weather this weekend. And, of course, most people, if you're interested in the Super Bowl, you're not going to really care that it's cloudy on Sunday because you're either going to be watching the Super Bowl or certainly partying until the Super Bowl starts. So we'll be right back after we have a couple spots from sponsors. Believe me, if you haven't lost the weight yet, you're not going to like the first one.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Well, I guess that's what we heard from one sponsor, and I don't know about you, but I'm sick of it. I probably will not lose more weight this year, and it's not a fun reminder. But in any event, what's happening in the law? Well, it's interesting. At least there's a case that I think is very interesting, and I think it will be of interest to people. It is in a criminal investigation. The question was access to stored Twitter data. And in a ruling of first impression, meaning this is the first time it's come up before the appellate court, the New Jersey appellate court has ruled with respect to a social media platform, Twitter, and can they be forced to turn over to law enforcement data that has been stored on its servers. So this is a case where it's rather a long caption because the case, and it has been approved for publication, which means that it'll be precedent setting for trial courts. And in this case, the case name is in the matter of the application of the state of New Jersey for communications data warrants to obtain the contents of stored communications from Twitter, Inc., from users at, and then it's a blank, and at another at. So this case, and it's a 22-page opinion, and the state of New Jersey, of course, applied for two communications data warrants. They're called CDWs, seeking the contents of two specific Twitter accounts. Now, the trial judge, and it was brought up in the law division, which would be the trial court that would be handling something like this, and so the law division judge issued both CDWs. However, he edited both of them to prohibit the state's access to any oral or aural components of any videos or video messages contained in the accounts. So now the state, relying in large part on the appellate division case State v. Diaz, which was a case that goes back to 1998, and that manuals, and that was a ruling that manuals issued by the AOC regarding judicial review of requests of CDWs. So the judge, based on that, concluded that such components were oral communications under the Wiretap Act. Now, in New Jersey, there's a federal Wiretap Act, but we also have a statute in New Jersey, NJSA, which means New Jersey Statutes Annotated, 2A:156A-1, and that goes -1 through 37. And the trial judge said that based on the wiretap statute, they could not be accessed by a CDW, but rather only if the state could satisfy the more stringent requirements necessary for the issuance of a wiretap. And so that the trial judge said that the state had to show, and it's a much more stringent requirement that's necessary to issue a wiretap order. So the case went up to the appellate division, and the appellate division reversed. They concluded that Twitter postings are electronic communications in electronic storage and accessible with a CDW. In other words, that the appellate division said that these electronic communications that are in electronic storage are in fact accessible with a communications data warrants. Now the fact, the appellate division said, the fact that the postings may contain videos that in turn contain the recorded human voice does not alter the inherent nature of the tweet as an electronic communication. Now this was approved for publication. This is the type of case that the Supreme Court might decide to take up if certification is filed. But at this point, this is the law until such time as the Twitter Inc. would get a stay from the appellate division, and they would really only get a stay based on Well, they could get a stay from the trial court or the appellate division, but only if, in fact, they're trying to get certification by the Supreme Court. So stay tuned. We'll find out if, in fact, Twitter is simply going to acquiesce or if, in fact, they're going to try to take this issue up to the New Jersey Supreme Court. Because if not, this, of course, would be law, and all of the trial judges would have to follow this. So that one is pretty significant and will be significant in the future with respect to that type of communication. And, of course, this was also a situation where it was a criminal investigation. So it was not civil, but it was an investigation by law enforcement. And that I have not read the decision, but I don't think it turns on the fact that it was based on law enforcement investigation, because frankly, usually it's more difficult and much more is needed, at times at least, to get warrants in criminal matters. So there was good news for job installers who work for Lowe's. The Lowe's Home Centers, they've agreed to pay $2.85 million to settle a New Jersey class action suit claiming that Lowe's misclassified contract installers as independent contractors. Now, the reason that that's important is if their employees, and that's what this is basically saying, that they were not independent contractors, so that they were actually employees of Lowe's, which means that Lowe's have to pay the Social Security rather than the independent contractors having to pay double Social Security. So that one is now whether or not the $2.85 million, what that actually comes out to after fees, et cetera, will could be very minimal. And that's one of the problems with class action suits. Very often the actual amount that the victims receive is minuscule, to say the least. I think I got a check recently, and I don't even know what it was for, but it was for something like 20 cents. The New Jersey Supreme Court has ruled that the world's largest manufacturer of flavor and fragrances can demand up to $500 million in insurance coverage for environmental damage it caused at its operations in Clifton, New Jersey, even though one of its units transferred its coverage to another unit. So this is a big win because they're going to, their insurance company is going to have to pay. And of course, it's a big win for New Jersey if there's going to have to be a cleanup. Now there, there's a U.S. case with respect to appeals, but I'm not sure it's much interest. What we are hearing, though, is that former judges and prosecutors and defenders are protesting President Trump's sweeping order restricting immigration from seven Muslim countries and the sacking of Attorney General Sally Yates for refusing to defend it. And Sally Yates, of course, was the acting Attorney General. And so here we go. There's going to be a lot more of that, certainly, as we go ahead in this presidency. Whether you like him or not, there's going to be a lot of controversy. So I know that there's been, of course, we probably all have heard now that Trump has nominated Judge Neil Gorsuch as the his nominee for the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, some people are saying, well, since Judge Gorsuch received unanimous approval when he was appointed to the 10th, he's an appellate judge in the 10th Circuit, which is out in Colorado. so that, you know, since that was unanimous, you know, this should be unanimous. Well, obviously, there's much more scrutiny when it comes to judges who, well, not only judges, because it doesn't have to be a judge, but anyone who's going to be appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court, there's going to be more scrutiny. And, of course, they're going to look into his record because he's been sitting, I believe, for about 10 years on the appellate on the appeals court. So this, I don't think, from my understanding, he was ever a district court judge, meaning he was never a federal district court judge, but he was, of course, appointed to the appellate court in Colorado. Now, you know, obviously there's going to be many advocacy groups in this case who both like and or criticize his positions on regulatory matters and civil rights. That's going to be a big issue here. The other thing that, of course, is concern is should there be payback politically because the Republicans refused to even bring President Obama's nominee to the floor for a vote. And frankly, I spoke out against that. I would always speak out against that because at least the nominee should have had an opportunity to be voted up or down and should have had an opportunity to go before the legislature and have his views known. In both cases, it's his, obviously. And then have the vote. So I would say in this case, he also has a right to appear, have his views known, and then there should be a vote. I think that's what we've seen, of course, and those of us who probably more lawyers than others are concerned that it will be more than a year before Justice Anton Scalia's seat on the Supreme Court is filled because of the Republicans and their absolute refusal to bring anyone up for a vote. You know, and this has become, again, another hot potato, another political hot potato. And frankly, if the nominee is, when I say a good nominee, if the nominee is of the stature that Judge Gorsuch seems to be, then the president has a right to nominate and put him on the bench. Now, of course, the other political part of this is whether or not the Democrats or people who oppose him, because deep felt, and it's not only going to be Democrats, but deep felt concerns about some of his views, whether or not they should back off on this nomination, because, of course, he would be filling the shoes of, if not the most conservative, one of the most conservative justices that we've ever had on the Supreme Court. I mean, Justice Scalia was about as conservative as any judge could be and let his views known. Of course, the interesting thing is that if approved, Justice Gorsuch will be sitting on the court with Justice Kennedy, and he had clerked for Justice Kennedy. And there's no question that his credentials are impeccable. And there's also no question that people who oppose his views are extremely worried because he's 49 years old and could sit on the bench for 30 or more years. So that's what's happening there. There's, as far as a proof for publication, there was a Supreme Court case, and I mentioned that the court in this Fragrances Corp versus Aetna Casualty Insurance, the court in the Supreme Court, that was a Supreme Court case, they had determined whether New Jersey adheres to the rule that an anti-assignment clause in an insurance policy may not bar the assignment of a post-loss claim, even though the claim has not been reduced to a money judgment. A legal rule that is overwhelming numbers of jurisdictions around the country have accepted. So in this case, the Supreme Court adopted a policy that once an insured's loss has incurred, an anti-assignment clause in an occurrence policy may not provide a basis for the insurer's to decline coverage based on the insured's assignment of the right to invoke policy coverage for that loss. So in this case, the assignment at issue was a post-loss claim, and therefore the rule voiding application of anti-assignment clauses to such policies applies. And of course, this was, as I said, significant. We were talking about $500 million. So that means that the insurance company is on the hook for that. So there was a case, the Third Circuit, which is our circuit of appeals, dismissed a wage class suit against Robert Half. And it's a case that previously yielded a precedential ruling on whether it's up to the courts or arbitrators to decide the issue of class arbitrability. Boy, that's a word. Whether it can be, whether this class of cases can be arbitrated. Now, a federal appeals panel has declined to read an authorization to arbitrate on a class-wide basis into a contract presented to employees of the placement firm Robert Haft. So they declined to read an authorization to arbitrate on that class-wide basis. So this is always significant because many employers want employees to have to participate in binding arbitration rather than going to court. And so this can be very significant in the way that's put into these contracts. So let me do this. I'm going to bring you up to speed with a couple more of our sponsors, and then I'll be back with It's the Law.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
You know, it's really great to have these guys supporting our station. First of all, Randy, you know, if you ever want to sell gold, buy gold, or just have a good chat, go stop and talk to Randy at Rab Coins right here in Flemington on Main Street. And then I want to thank Crown Trophy, not only for being a good neighbor, a good business here in Flemington, but they put on the Super Bowl party last night at Crown Trophy. It was well attended by, it was a card club, it was well attended, but more than that, it was really fun. And I got to meet a couple of other Packer fans, and which is always fun, and trying to figure out why we are Packer fans. And all three of us actually were from Wisconsin originally. And then I talked to someone who I like, even though he's a Patriots fan. But anyway, thanks a lot, Jim, and everybody at Crown Trophy. You're great, and I don't have to hear once again how I should be losing weight, which is, you know, one of our first sponsors, and I guess I should appreciate it. But, you know, maybe we need a new spot. Tell us how to lose weight a little bit more gently, perhaps. In any event, let's talk about, we'll play a couple more spots from our sponsors, and then we'll be back to It's the Law.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Tony Clark, Parrot Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Hey, these guys are good guys to work with, too. Well, did you think that New Jersey lawmakers would miss something if they could figure out a way to regulate something in New Jersey? Guess not. I'll have to talk to my sports guys friends about this, but guess what's getting moving closer to regulations, and that is the committee acts, New Jersey Assembly Committee, that is, acts on fantasy sports regulations. So they're moving closer to regulating fantasy sports betting. And, of course, anyone who has not had their head in the sand probably knows that this has become a multi-million dollar a year industry, and until recently it's gone unregulated nationwide. So what we're doing in New Jersey is we're trying to change that. You know, frankly, I don't know if that's good or not good, but in any event, it's not surprising that this will be happening. Now, there was some lucky guy who actually, a jury in Passaic County awarded $850,000 to the plaintiff in a legal malpractice case in which the attorney, defendant's attorney, failed to obtain expert reports. And that was, you know, he got this legal malpractice case because there wasn't a report. And, of course, an expert report on the other side. So, of course, there should have been. That goes without saying. And why that happened, you know, I don't know. There was a land use and planning case approved for publication this past week. It had to do with the application of the Township of South Brunswick for a judgment of compliance and repose and temporary immunity from the Mount Laurel lawsuits. And I'm really not going to go into that case. The Mount Laurel decisions are extremely complicated, and that's, in any event, that one is, there's a new case if anyone is interested in it. It was done in the Law Division, Middlesex County. Judge Wolfson was handling those cases. And there was also a civil procedure case. The court entered a protective order quashing notices in lieu of subpoena that were issued. And this is interesting. Issued to a plaintiff's parent corporation's chairman, president, and chief executive office. Executive officer. And the court concluded that in evaluating whether good cause exists to preclude the deposition of a high-level or senior corporate executive of a publicly traded corporation, an apex deposition, the court must consider whether the deponent, meaning the person who's going to be deposed, possesses some unique firsthand non-repetitive knowledge of the facts at issue, and whether the proponent of the deposition, meaning the person who's asking for the deposition, has exhausted other less intrusive discovery methods. Now, the court found that although there's no per se rule existing barring depositions of senior corporate executives, the court observed that when the deponent has certified that he or she has no personal knowledge of the material facts at issue, a protective order is appropriate. And the court found that under such circumstances, the principles espoused under one of the court rules, actually a couple of the court rules, are not upended by requiring the deposing party to first seek discovery through other less intrusive means and from lower level employees who are likely to have direct knowledge. Now, I'm not sure why there would have been notices in lieu of subpoena. Usually, a notice in lieu of subpoena is to get a party to court. But in any event, in this case, it was the director of the Division of Taxation was trying to, get this executives of this company for deposition, and they filed the court filed a protective order to protect them from having to appear in this particular case. And all of these cases would be, certainly a motion to quash usually is very specific. What are people trying to quash? Why? Because we have very broad discovery in New Jersey. And so that, however, it can't be a fishing trip. So I've seen, actually, I once had to issue a subpoena to the executive, actually the corporate chairman of a company in a matrimonial case. But my basis for doing that is that no lower-level employee knew about a certain compensation that only very high-level employees received, and certain also benefits, retirement benefits, that were not part of the benefits that anyone else in the company received, so that they were significant as far as a divorce case. But the only way that I could get access to any of the information was through one of the very high-level employees, one of the officers in that corporation, because the HR department didn't have any knowledge. So actually, the judge very reluctantly allowed me to serve the subpoena. And, of course, you know, I had the information that I needed once they complied. So these, it's a balancing. Obviously, it's balancing. You don't want harassment. You don't want someone who had nothing to do and no personal knowledge. You don't want to have them deposed. I recently had a case where, another matrimonial case, where although the attorney was permitted to depose my client's employer in New York, you know, it really didn't yield anything, and it bordered on harassment. So you never know. In another criminal law case, another Supreme Court case, State versus Kuczynski, the court considered whether cross-examination regarding facts to which the defendant testified at trial but omitted to in his statement to the police was proper. So in this case, the Supreme Court found that the defendant waived his right to remain silent, and therefore the state was able to question him on cross-examination about the inconsistencies between his post-arrest statement to the police and his statement on direct examination at trial. So this, of course, was about inconsistencies. And that, so in other words, you know, if you say one thing to the police and then testify differently, you're going to open yourself up for, obviously, for cross-examination. And that's what happened here. And, in fact, they were not able, his attorneys were not able to prevent him from being cross-examined. So there is also a criminal law motor vehicle case in the appeal, and this was an appeal from, I'm just trying to make a note here on this one case because it is significant. But on this criminal law motor vehicle case, the appeal, it was from a conviction for vehicular homicide, and the defendant in that case argued that the trial judge erred in excluding a letter she alleged her husband wrote in which he accepted responsibility 6 months after the fact for driving the car at the time of the accident that caused the victim's death. Now, in this case, the appellate division concluded that the defendant presented a prima facie showing of authenticity based on her testimony, and this was at a what we call a Rule 104 hearing, that she observed her husband as he wrote and signed the note. Therefore, the appellate division held that the judge should have admitted the note into evidence and given the jury the opportunity to subject it and the defendant's testimony to more intense review. And the appellate division also concluded that the trial judge committed error in barring the defendant from introducing evidence of her driving habits in support of her contention that she was not driving on the night of the accident. So, very interesting. Why, in fact, you know, he would admit it 6 months later. And it doesn't say, I haven't read the case, but it doesn't say that, you know, he was on his deathbed or he died and she brought something up later. But in any event, that's that one is shows that, in fact, the courts have to be very careful if somebody brings up something that's going to possibly, you know, reverse a sentence, and that's, of course, a very difficult sentence. Vehicular homicide. In most cases, it can be very difficult, and it can be a long sentence. Not all cases, obviously, but in some. So the we have a few more minutes. There was a discrimination suit that was published, came out this week, and this week. Still, January was this week. So that there was a jury award of $51.5 million in a Lockheed Martin age discrimination suit. And so the federal jury in Camden issued a verdict that would require Lockheed Martin to pay $51.5 million, including $50 million in punitive damages in an age discrimination suit by an engineer, according to the court records. So that was, have not heard if that went up on appeal or if the judge reduced the award. And judges can do that. If they find an award, if they feel an award is excessive, they have the right to reduce the amount. I think that's all I need to say on that one. Now we finally, in the Superior Court, are close to full strength. More judges than has been the case in a number of years. However, it's not clear how the judiciary will portion out the 20 new judgeships created to accommodate the state's new criminal justice reforms, and whether or not those reforms are so onerous, meaning, I guess I should not use the term onerous, but will create such a workload increase that 20 new judicial positions are not going to make a dent, and in fact the judiciary is going to be have much more work than the 20 additional judges could possibly handle. And that, of course, was a real concern because the bail, the change in bail, and the fact that judges have to hear all these bail hearings is going to be huge, especially in counties where there's a lot of criminal cases. I mean, when we're talking about Hunterdon County, we don't have as many cases here, but you proportionately, meaning, you know, yes, our population is smaller, but we still don't have the kind of crime that you're finding in, you know, Newark, Elizabeth, Camden, and some of these cities. And, in fact, some of the suburbs around the cities. So we're going to take one more short break to talk about sponsors and then come back and tell you about the rest of the legal news.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Well, we had another commercial from Randy, but that's fine. To this hour, that's great. Let me go back and see if we can wrap this up with a few more cases and decisions of the courts here in New Jersey. And they're also working on the building, so if you hear a lot of noise in the background, they look like they're jackhammering fairly close to the window. And by the way, we are now in our new digs on Main Street, and they're doing a fabulous job renovating this building. It's historical. There's a lot of history, but I'm really pleased to see the way they're doing the work. Apparently, we had an anonymous donation, and this woman who provided money for two wonderful chandeliers, and I believe also to restore the floors. And so if you come in, you'll have to look at these beautiful wood floors. They've been totally restored. There's some new wood flooring that, frankly, they've matched it. Not exactly matched it, but it's so good. It really is just a delight in seeing what a nice building, and in the future, what this is really going to be a boon for Flemington. So hats off to everyone who's conceived and worked on this project. So what else I wanted to, there's at least there's a federal judge in New Jersey who's ruled that homeowners insurance companies that sent letters to its insureds amounted to an unequivocal denial of benefits for the purpose of the policy suit limitations, even though it also reference benefits that could be paid and did not use the word, was not done right. And so that the, whatever this is, it's a little bit confusing the way it's written. So in any event, Superstorm Sandy, that litigation still goes on. People are still dealing with their insurance companies. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we were talking earlier about the battle of experts, but then it talked about the person, the plaintiff who was awarded a large sum because the defendant did not have an expert. And what we do know in New Jersey is that most lawsuits against professionals eventually come down to a battle of the experts. And claims of negligence against a professional rise and fall on the strength of the expert's proof and the proofs offered in prosecuting or defending claims of professional negligence. On the other hand, it may be too easy to sue medical and legal professionals because the idea that a lot of people have is that the insurance companies will pay because they don't want to take these cases to trial. Certainly the case with insurance companies and lawyers, I understand that's not the case or certainly not the case in some places with some insurance companies who represent doctors. But that, is just not right. And if you see, certainly there are some malpractice cases. I'm not going to say there aren't. But on the other hand, some people want to sue when there's really no legitimate basis. The fact that someone loses a lawsuit doesn't mean that their attorney committed malpractice. It probably means that they should have not brought the lawsuit, or perhaps even settled the lawsuit, and they were unwilling to do so, even though the attorney was encouraging them to do so, and then they lose, and they turn around and blame the attorney. I guess that seems to be life in the 21st century. In any event, there was another public records case approved for publication, and this was, of course, the defendant was the Office of the Governor. And this has to do with the Open Public Records Act. You may have heard it called OPRA, O-P-R-A. And it is, of course, a statute, NJSA 47:1A-1-13. Now, that does not permit government agencies to deny a citizen access to all requests for public records by third parties. And also There's a case, Gannett NJ Partners LP versus the County of Middlesex. That was a case in 2005, and that case does not provide authority for the blanket denial of access to all third-party OPRA requests. So this is going to be one more, probably the last case. This case, the Middlesex case, was, you know, in 2005. So there will probably be, and I haven't read this. This was just approved for publication, but there probably will be references to other cases, and we'll also see what the difference is between, 2017 and 2005. Very often, the law has changed, the law has advanced, and there's recognition in the newer cases. So that's one of the things that we'll have to, check. There's a case, a family law case, that even though it was published, in this case the plaintiff appealed from multiple provisions in a post-judgment parenting time order. So what happened in 2014, the trial court had stayed an order for children to visit the defendant in Oregon and ordered a plenary hearing to address the safety and welfare of the children while in the physical custody of either parent. So this is in 2014, and not surprising, at least to attorneys, no plenary hearing was ever had, and neither party moved to schedule a plenary hearing or comply, I guess I should say, neither to schedule a plenary hearing or to compel compliance with that order. Now, the plaintiff came back and now argued that the trial court's failure to schedule such a hearing required the trial court to take original jurisdiction and reverse the provisions of the original order. Now, the defendant, on the other hand, asserted that his finances had been exhausted by the many court proceedings since the party's 2008 Oregon divorce and the plaintiff's move to New Jersey with the children. Plaintiff contended that the defendant emotionally and physically abused the children, and defendant contended plaintiff cycled the children through therapists and doctors, and that Munchausen syndrome by proxy needed to be investigated. So what did the court do in all of this? Munchausen syndrome by proxy, by the way, is that the parent is actually making the child sick. The child is really not, does not have any of these sicknesses, but is reacting to the parent. So in any event, the court lifted the stay as to the defendant's 2014 parenting time as moot, dismissed the appeal, and ordered the trial court to establish a schedule for a plenary hearing to occur within 45 days. So now this was an appeal by the plaintiff of the post-judgment parenting time order. And it must have been a new order because obviously there's a 45-day limit in which to appeal an order. And in this case, the court, meaning the appellate division, lifted the stay with respect to his parenting time and dismissed the appeal and ordered the trial court to establish a schedule for a plenary hearing. And that's one of the things that is not unusual, is that the trial courts are so busy that plenary hearings, when they're ordered, either post-judgment or while a case is pending, they're just, they